Welcome to Behind Cleveland, a community-powered digital media platform dedicated to uncovering the heart and soul of Cleveland. Real stories from real people, amplifying voices, places, and spaces. And step outside the city limits with Beyond Cleveland, bringing you stories from around the nation. Tune in to discover and explore as we take you behind.
Welcome to Beyond Cleveland from Behind Cleveland. We're a community-powered digital media platform dedicated to uncovering the heart and soul of Cleveland, amplifying voices, places, and spaces. And today we're taking a deep dive into the world of Chef Jason Foley Loves.
What's up, guys? Tonight, man, we're at an awesome event. We're with my friend Chef Brendan Collins at one of his restaurants in West Hollywood, Boa Steak. Tonight we have such a dope tasting menu for you guys. Five courses. I got two dishes on the menu tonight. It's going to be sensational. Let's go.
I need a spice from Japan to toss on the chicken when it comes out of the fryer. You know what I'm saying? Why can't I use acacia honey with my hot sauce mixed together to toss the chicken? Why can't I do olive oil, poached cherry tomatoes with my shrimp and grits? And why can't I make the sauce on the bottom of the plate out of my young grill? It just tastes. You know what I'm saying? So, like, these things just all go well.
Sounds delicious. I'm ready.
Right. Yeah. So I've got a really fascinating collection of material here that you shared with me. Everything from his hot sauce company, Tumi Coco.
Interesting.
To interviews and articles detailing his culinary philosophy and his career journey. And our mission today is to really unpack all of this and understand what makes up Chef Foley Loves' unique culinary identity and his entrepreneurial spirit.
Okay, so, like, what are the ingredients of this chef?
Yeah, what are the special ingredients
that
make him so successful? So, jumping right in, it's really clear that Chef Foley Love has a strong connection to his beginnings.
It really comes through in everything I've seen, yeah.
Right. He consistently refers to Cleveland Heights as home. And for you, our listeners, it's important to understand that Cleveland Heights wasn't just a place he grew up. It profoundly shaped his understanding of soul food.
Okay.
And soul food for him wasn't just about specific dishes. It was more about the feeling of home and community, which is, a very personal touchstone that informs his entire culinary outlook.
That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Like those early experiences really shape you, right?
They really do.
And especially when we're talking about food, it's so connected to those memories.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To family, to your childhood.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting to consider how his definition of soul food kind of evolved from there.
Okay.
You know, because it wasn't confined to a traditional list of dishes, right? He spent part of his childhood in Africa. He attended an international school.
Yeah.
So that really broadened his palate at a very young age.
Yeah, that's such a unique experience.
It is.
And it's not just about tasting different foods, but like you were saying, it's about understanding the culture and the stories behind them.
Absolutely.
And that really comes through in his fusion philosophy later on.
Yes, it does. And I think that's a really important point for our listeners to really think about how those early exposures weren't just about tasting different things, but understanding their context and their stories.
Like the why behind the what.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it really planted those seeds for the global approach that we see in his cooking later on.
I see. Okay. So early influences shaping his later career.
Yeah, absolutely. And those early sensory experiences, I think we can really see how they shaped his palate in a lot of ways.
Okay.
So let's unpack his professional journey a bit.
Okay. Yeah, let's dive in.
You know, he got some initial experience in New York City's corporate dining scene, which I imagine gave him a really solid grounding in the financial realities of the restaurant business.
Yeah, I bet that was a whole different world.
Yeah. And then he moved to the Ritz-Carlton in the Virgin Islands, which, I imagine further expanded his culinary horizons.
Mm-hmm. Ritz-Carlton, that's pretty high end.
It is.
Must have been quite the experience.
So he's got this understanding of the business side in New York.
All right.
And then this kind of high end experience in the Virgin Islands. How do you think that contrasted or maybe even complemented each other from a purely culinary perspective?
That's a great question. I mean, corporate world probably instilled this sense of efficiency and scale, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
While the Ritz-Carlton would focus on luxury, on service excellence, probably with all sorts of different cuisines.
I imagine.
So it's kind of a combination of those practical skills and then that high-end refinement.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's interesting because he specifically says that he was drawn to California because so many of the chefs he admired had worked there.
Oh, yeah.
Like Mark Peel and Joel Robuchon.
You have to spend 80 hours a week in one restaurant. And one thing that I've learned from my mentors is no truly successful chef does that, because you can't really expand your financial ability if you're always stuck in one place doing the same thing over and over again, right? So I think you need to diversify. And that's, you know, in a sense, that's what I've learned from my mentors, and that's how they were able to open so many successful restaurants and have hands in so many different businesses and, you know, write cookbooks and have products and different types of restaurants, because they were able to mentor the right people up, hire the right people, put them in position, empower them to help them run their business.
Big names.
Huge names.
Yeah. And he worked with the Joachim Splitschel Group, which he describes as a masterclass in fine dining.
Wow.
So that really speaks to the level of culinary rigor he was embracing.
Absolutely.
What do you think it was about their work that resonated most with them?
I think it was the emphasis on fresh seasonal ingredients.
Okay, yeah.
That's a hallmark of Californian cuisine, right?
Absolutely.
And I think we can see those influences in his own style.
The farm-to-table ethos, right?
Yeah.
Like bringing those fresh local ingredients to the forefront.
Exactly. And that really became a core tenet for him.
That's really cool. And it makes you think about how those early experiences, like we were talking about, really shaped his approach to cooking.
Absolutely.
So from corporate dining to the Ritz-Carlton to California and these renowned chefs, it's like each step built upon the last.
Yeah. It's almost like a recipe itself, right?
Exactly.
It all comes together to create this delicious final product.
I like that.
So, you know, speaking of California and his time there, his time as the executive chef at Malibu Pier Restaurant and Bar.
Okay.
This seems like a real turning point for him.
In what way?
You know, he was celebrating the local seafood, the farmer's market bounty.
Sounds like a dream job.
It does, doesn't it?
Right on the pier. Fresh ingredients.
And he even appeared on the Food Network during that time, met Bobby Flay.
Wow. Okay. So this is where he starts to gain some wider recognition.
Yeah. And I think that exposure must have been significant in shaping his public persona, too.
Absolutely. Getting your name out there, showcasing your style to a larger audience.
Exactly. So, you know, we see this really clear progression, you know, from those early influences to this professional journey. And then, boom, he creates Barber Jean, this restaurant concept named after his mother.
Oh, that's sweet.
It is.
What was the concept behind Barber Jean?
It was really about reimagining soul food.
Okay, reimagining. So not just traditional soul food.
No, it wasn't just about serving the classics. It was about elevating those familiar comfort foods through a fine dining lens.
Interesting.
He didn't just want to serve fried chicken and collard greens.
Right.
He wanted to elevate them, you know, make them really special.
So how did he do that? What made Barber Jean different?
Well, he took those comforting, almost intrinsically African dishes.
Okay.
And he applied refined techniques. It was about bridging the gap between African-American culinary traditions and a high-end approach.
That's ambitious.
Yeah. He said that he wanted to take the food that he was eating and loving, you know, food that he considered African, essentially comfort food, and do that with a fine dining approach.
That's fascinating. So it's like taking something familiar
yeah.
and elevating it to a whole new level.
Exactly. It's like, how do you maintain that essence of comfort when you're elevating a dish?
That's a great question. You don't want to lose what makes it special.
Right.
But you also want to showcase those flavors
yeah.
in a new and exciting way.
Absolutely. And, you know, the way that he launched Barber Jean is also a testament to his entrepreneurial spirit.
Okay. How so?
Well, he started with pop-ups and residencies, and eventually, you know, he got licensing deals with places like the LAFC Stadium and the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
So you got to think, I started Barber Jean, my restaurant concept. I'm 47, so you got to think, I started Barber Jean when I was, it was 2014, so this is 10 years ago I started doing the pop-up, right? No, 20, I'm sorry. I started the concept while I was still at Malibu, but I didn't really launch it until 2017. So this is still, you know, we're going on 10 years since I did that. I think that at this point in my career, I'm past the pop-up stage. Like, I'm trying to just monetize all my talent and my abilities as I should be right now at this point in my career. So it's not like at this point in my career, if anything, I'm thinking about just getting a small restaurant space because I'm in a different financial situation now, right? So I have more access and more resources, and also more experience. So for me, the next thing for me, a pop-up would just be opening a small restaurant that has like 30 seats or a cafe or something like that. So what I'm really developing next, not to jump around too much, because of my hot sauce company, there's a lot to it. It's not just a hot sauce company, but what I'm actually thinking about doing is doing a Tumi Coco Cafe, where that's kind of like a very low overhead. We can sell all of our apparel and all of our products in it and still have this like great dining experience in it as well, but have it not be too big, and also create something that can be replicated so we can kind of franchise that.
So he was thinking outside the box.
He was.
Not just relying on a traditional restaurant.
No, he was using platforms like Feastly. He was finding creative ways to bring his vision to life.
That's smart.
Without necessarily needing that traditional brick and mortar restaurant right from the start.
Yeah, it's like testing the waters, building a following, and then taking those next steps.
Exactly. So what do you think his success with those non-traditional models tells us about the restaurant landscape today?
Well, I think it shows that there's a lot of room for innovation.
Okay.
You know, you don't necessarily have to follow the traditional path. There are all these different avenues for bringing your vision to life. And I think it also speaks to the power of brand building, you know, even outside of a brick and mortar space.
Absolutely. So now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about Tumi Coco.
Okay, the hot sauce company.
Yes. And this seems like a natural extension of his culinary vision.
Definitely. I mean, hot sauce is a staple in so many cuisines.
It is.
And it can really elevate a dish.
Absolutely. But it's also a step beyond the traditional restaurant model, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's a whole different kind of business.
It is.
And, you know, it's a smart move.
Yeah.
Chefs are really embracing these product lines these days.
They are.
It's a way to reach a wider audience, build your brand.
It is. So where did the inspiration for Tumi Coco come from?
Well, he was actually the only chef at the LAFC stadium without a product to sell.
Oh, interesting.
So that kind of sparked the idea.
I see.
But his vision for Tumi Coco is much bigger than just a condiment.
Okay.
He sees it as a tool to make your food better.
Like an essential ingredient.
Exactly. And that reflects a really forward-thinking approach to culinary products. It's not just about flavor. It's about enhancing the entire cooking experience.
And it's become a whole brand, hasn't it?
It has.
You know, with the hot sauces themselves. And then he's got the Tumi Coco Cultural Guide cookbook. And even merchandise, like hoodies and hats.
Wow. Okay. So he's really created a lifestyle brand around this.
Yeah, he has.
And the cookbook is a great way to showcase the versatility of the sauces.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it encourages home cooks to experiment.
And it's got 25 recipes.
Nice.
That use the sauces.
And the merchandise?
Yeah.
That's smart.
It is.
It builds brand recognition.
Absolutely.
It connects with consumers on a different level.
It does.
Yeah.
What stands out to you about this multifaceted approach?
I think it's really impressive how he's managed to create this cohesive brand.
Okay.
That extends beyond just the product itself. It's about creating a community. It's about sharing his passion for food. And, you know, it's really working.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Yeah.
So now let's delve into his philosophy of fusion.
Okay. One of my favorite things to talk about.
This seems to be a really core element of his culinary style.
And it's not just about throwing random ingredients together, right?
No, no, not at all.
There's a real thoughtfulness to it, a respect for the different cultures he's drawing from.
Absolutely. It's a very thoughtful and respectful blending of global flavors that are deeply rooted in the traditions of the African diaspora.
I like that. So it's fusion with a purpose.
Yes, exactly. And that respect and intention are really key. You know, he views food as a universal language, a way to connect people.
Yeah.
And to bring cultures together on a plate.
Food can definitely do that.
In a harmonious way. And he gives examples like using Japanese spices on fried chicken.
Oh, wow.
Or Peruvian chili in a sauce.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of those combinations.
Right. And those pairings might sound a little unexpected, but in his hands, they create this really unique and delicious experience.
I bet.
And I think it's important for our listeners to understand that true fusion isn't about erasing culinary identities. Mm. It's about creating a dialogue between them.
Okay, so it's like a conversation happening on your plate.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it.
And a perfect example of this is his beef duo at BOA Steak.
Tell me about it.
Okay. So you've got Australian Wagyu beef, you've got braised oxtail, you've got coconut rice arancini, and you've got apricot muhammara sauce.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
It is, but in a delicious way, right?
That's sure. So break this down for me. How do all those elements represent different culinary traditions.
Okay, so you've got the Australian Wagyu beef, which is known for its marbling.
Right, very specific type of beef.
And then you've got the braised oxtail, which is a technique that's found in a lot of different cultures.
Right.
And then the coconut rice arancini, which brings in those Southeast Asian and Italian influences. And then the apricot mohammara sauce, which has Middle Eastern origins.
Wow.
So you've got all these different flavors and textures that are coming together in a really harmonious way.
So it's not just fusion for the sake of it.
No, no.
He's really thinking about how those flavors complement each other.
It's a story on a plate.
It is. I love that. A culinary story.
So beyond his own kitchen, Chef Fully Love has some broader perspectives on food and the industry that I think are worth talking about.
Okay. I'm interested to hear this.
He really emphasizes the need for better food education.
Okay.
You know, helping people understand what real food is and how to prepare it.
That's so important these days.
It is.
With so much processed food out there, people are losing touch with where their food comes from.
And he stresses the importance of foundational cooking skills.
Right. The basics.
The basics.
You can't build a house without a strong foundation.
Exactly. And he kind of laments this trend where some chefs are seeking fame without mastering those basics.
Hmm. Interesting. So it's like they're skipping steps.
They are.
Trying to get to the top without putting in the work.
And I think that really speaks to a certain grounding in tradition, even amidst all this innovation.
Yeah, I see that. So back to basics, but with a forward-thinking approach.
Right. And his take on technology like AI is pretty interesting, too.
Okay, what does he think about that?
He sees it as a useful tool for certain tasks, like clerical tasks,
okay,
but not a replacement for human creativity in the kitchen.
That makes sense. I mean, AI can help with the logistics, but it can't replicate the human touch.
Exactly. You know, he understands the potential of technology, but he firmly believes that the heart of culinary innovation lies in human creativity.
Absolutely. It's that spark, that intuition that you can't program.
And what are your thoughts on that balance between technology and creativity?
It's a tricky one. I think technology can definitely be an asset.
Okay.
But it shouldn't overshadow the human element. You know, it's like you can use a computer to design a beautiful cake, but you still need a skilled baker to bring it to life.
Absolutely. And, you know, he also believes that the perfect dining experience goes beyond just the menu.
That's so true. It's about the whole experience.
Yeah.
The atmosphere, the service, the little details.
It's about creating that holistic experience, right?
Exactly. It's about making people feel welcome, comfortable, and excited to be there.
And that's something that I think is important for all of us to remember, whether we're diners or people who are working in the industry.
Agreed. It's those extra touches that make a meal truly memorable.
Okay, so looking ahead, it doesn't sound like Chef Fully Love is slowing down anytime soon.
From what I've seen, he's always got something cooking.
He does. He feels like he has so much more to do. Mm. And he's constantly generating new ideas. He's got his event company, Jason George Events, which handles a wide range of special occasions.
That's cool.
It is.
So he's not limiting himself to just restaurants.
No.
He's really branching out.
And his vision for a potential Tumi Coco Cafe shows that he wants to further integrate his products and his culinary vision into a physical space.
I like that. A place where people can really experience the brand firsthand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was particularly interested in his ambition to produce a documentary about Black farmers.
Oh, wow. That's really powerful.
It is.
It shows a real commitment to exploring those deeper narratives within the food system.
Yes. And his approach to mentorship also really stood out to me.
What's his approach?
I think that's an interesting question. So I will tell you this. Most people who work for me have worked for me for 5 to 10 years, and then I see the girl go on and just do amazing things on their own. To me, that's mentoring, right? I can't really mentor someone unless they actually spend time working. Like, for me to get on the phone, like, and I've actually had chefs around the country send me messages online and say, hey, can you mentor me? I'm like, I can't mentor you if you're in Atlanta. You know, like, if you just want to have a conversation, I can give you advice, right? But I don't know if that's necessarily mentoring. So I'm always here available for a conversation. But I think to mentor someone, they need to actually work with you and understand your thought process. And you have to know who they are so you can mentor them properly to understand their personalities and help them go in the direction you think they should be going, or at least help them figure out what direction that is. For me to just have like one-off conversations with people, yeah, that's more of like we can talk and be friends. But I don't know. I don't necessarily consider that mentoring. Maybe they would. But, you know, with that in mind, like I said, a lot of people have worked for me for many years.
He emphasizes hands-on experience.
Okay.
And long-term collaboration, you know, which really reflects his commitment to nurturing the next generation of talent.
That's so important. Sharing your knowledge, passing the torch.
And it's something that we can all learn from.
Definitely.
So, you know, in terms of a defining culinary moment, you know, he doesn't feel like he's made it, but he identifies his time at Malibu Pier Restaurant and Bar as a period where his style really came to life.
Right. Like he was really finding his voice.
Yeah.
But it sounds like the evolution into barbecue allowed him to really explore that personal voice even further.
And a perfect example of that is his smoked pork agnolotti dish.
Oh, tell me about that.
Okay, so it's barbecue pork stuffed pasta
okay.
with charred corn puree and popcorn shoots.
Now that's a fusion dish.
It is.
Blending Italian techniques with barbecue flavors.
And it really encapsulates his philosophy, doesn't it?
It does. It's unexpected, it's creative, and I bet it's absolutely delicious.
It makes you think about the possibilities when you blend those different culinary worlds.
It does. It opens up a whole new world of flavor combinations.
So Chef Jason Fullilove's journey, from his roots in Cleveland Heights to his ventures in L.A., really offers a compelling look at the world of food, and I think it's really inspiring.
It is. He's a great example of what you can achieve with passion, hard work, and a little bit of creativity.
Absolutely. And we hope this deep dive has given you a richer understanding of his career and maybe even sparked some new culinary curiosities of your own.
Always good to try something new.
It is. Don't forget to subscribe to Behind Cleveland. Show your love and support by subscribing today.